Good evening and welcome back to Amanda here on CQT 90.3 FM. You were just listening to Gil Scott-Heron with one of his true classics, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, which is just amazingly timely, which is the case with so much of his music, is that what he spoke of in the past still plagues us today. And much of what we're going to be looking at in the next 20 minutes has to do with the revolutionary moment in Tunisia and across the continent and elsewhere in the world. And the mass media has hardly done us a favor with this one. They did not allow us to have the information to understand where these revolutions came from, the deep discontent on the continent and why people are unhappy. And instead, it became a sensationalized moment where one young man committed suicide and suddenly the streets were on fire, which of course is absurd. It was part of a larger phenomenon of people who have been dispossessed generation after generation and quite simply can't take it anymore. So on that note, last week was African Liberation Day, and as part of that, Amandla was invited to moderate a discussion featuring Feroz Manji, who is the editor-in-chief of Pambazuka News, an invaluable source of African news, discussion, and debate that has been a real wellspring for Amandla over the last 10 years. It was a fascinating and wide-ranging discussion on everything from the revolutionary moment in Africa, triggered, as I said, by the events in Tunisia, to a terrific discussion about the deeply problematic role of NGOs and the development industry. We'll be bringing you the NGO discussion next week, but tonight, take the next 20 minutes and listen to Feroz Manji as he talks African struggle, revolution, and optimism.
May 25th. African Liberation Day. It's important that we mark this day as a sort of day of celebration. Celebration of what has been achieved, and we can critique what has been achieved, but it's important to give recognition to the fact that but for Western Sahara, we have at least formal independence across the continent. And certainly in the early periods of independence, much was achieved. And I think we have to acknowledge that as a context for understanding what has been lost. I also want to sort of celebrate what is not only happening now, but what will be happening for the next 10, 20 years. If the independence struggles, the successful independence struggles were act one, scene one, the uprisings we're seeing today are act one, scene two. Revolutions don't happen overnight. I mean, just to remind you that the Chinese Revolution took more than 40 years to reach a culmination. People always talk about the Russian Revolution 1917 as if it happened just overnight. It didn't. There were many successful and failed attempts, 1905 and so on, before it got to that stage, and much happened thereafter. It's poignant today to, you say, people talk about this as the Arab Spring. Mm-hmm. Well, let's look at it. That's certainly one perspective looks like that from the media. Tunisia and Egypt, Libya, Syria, Bahrain, Yemen, and so on. But then let's count what's going on elsewhere as well. There's uprisings in Western Sahara, brutally suppressed by the Moroccans. Benin, Gabon, Burkina Faso, Senegal, Uganda, Ethiopia, Botswana, South Africa. I just read a report that the South African police estimate that over the last 3 years there have been on average 8,000 popular uprisings across the country. I mean, extraordinary thing to be happening in Uganda, in Swaziland. Every time I open an internet site, I find yet another example of what is going on. And it's not just those countries. There are other African countries like Wisconsin, Spain. I mean, for the last few days, tens of thousands of people have been out on the streets of Spain. And they've been sending out a message across the internet saying, we don't want you to picket or demonstrate outside the Spanish embassies. What we want you to do is to do in your cities what we're doing in ours. Open up, and they say, open up your own Tahrir squares. And I think that's just amazing, okay? It is the African continent, it is Africa, which has been leading the way in this. And I think that's what we need to celebrate in terms of Africa Liberation Day. What's poignant about this is also, of course, it's the 140th anniversary of the Paris Commune. The coincidence of that with Spain and all these other uprisings is quite extraordinary. The question is, why is it happening? Why is it happening? Why is it happening now? And you know, the corporate media sort of tries to portray this as some kind of infectious disease, you know, that because the Tunisians did it, the Egyptians caught it. Yes. And to some extent, of course, people are inspired by revolutions and uprisings. Of course, people are inspired, but it's not sufficient to explain the enormous response. I mean, when Tunisia happened, when Egypt happened, my mailbox was absolutely full of emails from my compatriots in Kenya, saying if the Egyptians can do it, so can we. Mm-hmm. And I can guarantee you, before the year is out, we will see major uprisings happening in Kenya as well. And there is an organic reason for this happening and happening now. Because what people saw happening in Tunisia, what people saw happening in Egypt, was a reflection of their own experience. What they saw was people finally protesting against 30 years of immiseration under the structural adjustment programs, 30 years of dispossession of land, 30 years of dispossession of labor, of work, a privatization of the public domain, health, education, social welfare, energy, water, you name it. If it's profitable, it is privatized. And if it's not profitable, then it is privatized by the NGOs. Mm-hmm. What we have then is a situation of all the blood, sweat, and tears and lives lost in the struggle for liberation, which at least we achieved universal healthcare, universal education, and so on, and began taking ownership, collective ownership of our territories, has been reversed. Today, we die earlier than we ever did before, even before colonialism. Infant mortality is higher, child mortality is higher, maternal mortality is higher. And there has been a massive, massive dispossession of our territories, dispossession of our economies, dispossession also of our political domain. Because the issue here, because it does relate to what happened in Tunisia and Egypt, is that on top of all the dispossessions that have taken place, there has been a political dispossession as well. And that is, today our governments are more accountable to the international financial institutions, to the corporations, to the DFIDs, the BFIDs, the CEDAs, Bonitas, Canidas, Bonitas, all this trash of the aid industry. They are more accountable to them than they are to citizens. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so this is the ultimate humiliation. The ultimate humiliation that we face, that everything has been dispossessed from the victories of our independence. And there's a really interesting article, which I hope we will be publishing in Pambazuka News this week, as an interview with a Tunisian revolutionary. And he he quite accurately points out that it is not simply the sort of the social and economic deprivations which are motivating it. It's not purely the political dispossessions that have taken place, because those are important. But he raises the issue and says it is the loss of dignity that has impelled people eventually onto the street. And I think, you know, we should not underestimate the that aspect. Human dignity, without that you are nobody. And the whole process of development has been about depriving us of our own history, depriving us of our knowledge of our own history, depriving us of a connection with our own history. And once you do that to a people, you've removed their ultimate dignity. And that is what is propelling people onto the streets. Yes, there's all these other complex things about the specificities of the particular ruling class, the way it operates. You know, Bahrain is different from Kenya, it's different from Uganda, it's different from Mozambique, and so on. But underlying it are these trends. What I think the frustration that I feel and felt for the last 10 years has been that until we learn to call things what they are, we won't be able to develop a strategy for defeating it. And we don't have a developmental state. This is a euphemism which is, I mean, it's outrageous. What we are living in Africa is occupied territories. Our countries have been occupied by the large corporations, Samir Amin refers to as the oligopolies. These are the 500 to 700 corporations which have centralized, which have concentrated, and which today determine almost every aspect of our lives. But what's worse about this particular period is not only the level of concentration and centralization that has gone on in capital. It's not just the corporations. How is it, somebody put it to us the other day, General Motors, you know, used to produce cars and occasionally lend money. Today they lend money and occasionally produce cars.
Right.
Okay, and this is a description in a short way of the financialization of capital at a scale that is unprecedented. Samir Amin even argues that it has got to a state where the bourgeoisie itself is in a sense oppressed by the speculations and of finance capital, that actually it is, even they are not in control of what is going on. And if one sees the effect on food prices, on every aspect of our lives, what is surprising that is it has taken this long for us to get onto the streets and do something about it. And what is really exciting in my point of view is that at last, we are entering a period where old definitions about the North and the South, or our understanding what we mean by the global South, that it is, as I've always said with Africa, Africa is not a geography, it's a history. You know, it is a movement of the people. It's a huge, long history. You can't confine it to a geography. I think today we can't confine the global South to that geography. I think what we're seeing in Wisconsin and Ohio, what we've seen in Spain, what is likely to happen in places like London, which we've seen last year in France, I think are part of the manifestation that people are saying to me when I speak at public meetings. They're saying, but what you're describing sounds just like our country. And yet I'm talking about Africa. And I think that's the really interesting period today, that we actually have the opportunity to create that unity across boundaries. For Pambazuka, it's terrifying, because we have a hard enough job trying to cover Africa and comment on the world from an African perspective. If we now have to open the space up to the struggles in Latin America and in other parts of Africa like Wisconsin and Spain, then, you know, we're really facing up, but I'm not sure how we can stop ourselves doing so. And I think this is a really, it's an incredible moment. And, you know, is it a revolution? You raise the question, you know, are we talking about revolutions here? And I think it was Lenin who tried to explain that, you know, revolutions occur, or a revolutionary period occurs, when the ruling class, the people at the top, are no longer able to get away with the tricks they played in the past, and when the masses feel completely, you know, there's discontent. They no longer feel that they're being, you know, they're living in a country of mice run by fat cats, okay? And they think, well, actually, the mice should have a say in what's going on, okay? That's what's happening. And it's a revolutionary period, not necessarily a revolution. The distinction is an important one, because it can go any kind of direction. However, I do think that what has happened in Tunisia, I do think what has happened in Egypt, has all the elements for describing this as a beginning of a revolution. Because what happens is, when you have millions of people gone to the streets, just think it through. There's childcare, there's health, there's water, there's food, there's education, there's infrastructure, there's organizing of alternate political discussions, enabling other people who would never get a chance to speak to do so. And that has been going on across Egypt and Tunisia. And what that is the construction of an alternative power base. You know, it's sort of the early emergence of dual power, which is precisely what is needed to challenge the authority of the existing ruling class. And I think it's quite justifiable to describe those as revolutionary. But things never go unilateral, single direction, you know. And the ruling class, the international bourgeoisie, the imperialist bourgeoisie, is not going to sit there lying back, letting it happen. Let's look at what happened in Cote d'Ivoire, where we have regime change under a UN resolution. Okay, there's no two ways about it. Whatever one side one takes, that's the in Libya. The scale now, it's gone way, way, way beyond all their sort of claims to humanitarian intervention, protection of the people. It's now gone way. Even the British military are saying, hang on, we're going to have to think this through. This is not the way to go about it. The most recent report this morning shows, you know, the UK has spent over £1 billion on this war alone. It's likely to turn into an Iraq. And the similarities are that, you know, Libya has never been a country. It's been a territory. It's never been a country in that sense. It's the dividing line. It's the borderland between the Mashrek and the Maghreb. This is what it is. And it has a multiple different societies with different histories who have been brought together under the territory called Libya. And which is why the resolution of it is not going to be straightforward. Iraq was itself a formation by the British. It was not. It didn't exist historically, not in the form that it was eventually give rise to. We are living in a dangerous period. In Tunisia, the imperialist bourgeoisie is seeking to set up Ben Alism without Ben Ali, and in Egypt, Mubarakism without Mubarak. One of the really important things to understand, what Mubarakism was made up of the Mubarak family and their appropriations and collusion with the corporations. That was one leg of it. The second leg was it's the military, which the senior ranks own very large sections of the Egyptian economy. But the third one, which people forget, has always been, and what was established back by the British, is the Muslim Brotherhood. And they were given by the Mubarak regime the authority over the judiciary, over education, and over health. And they The propaganda was, let's keep Mubarak because he's keeping the Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamists out of the equation. Who are they talking to today? They're talking to the military, who are playing a very clever game, pretending to be neutral, but their neutrality is now slowly being exposed. But the Muslim Brotherhood are the key for the West's continuity, because the stakes in Egypt are enormous, because it is not just Egypt, it is Israel and Palestine. Mm. That is the threat that they face. I don't know how, we can't speculate which way things are going to go, but I do think that the people on the streets in Spain have got it right. Time now is not just for being nice and be solidarity actions with what people are doing, but to say, look, it's the same bastards, it's the same corporations, it's the same institutions who have been oppressing them, who are oppressing us, where we stand. And we have to move towards real solidarity, that is to say, to act on our own oppression and our own exploitation, that is the challenge that we face in the coming period. Okay? Because then you'll all be Africans. Okay? And because this is the African awakening. And Pambazuka was named 10 years ago by a romantic who said, there's an African awakening. Mm-hmm. Pambazuka, mm-hmm. The awakening. I'll stop there.
And you've just been listening to Feroz Manji, who's the editor-in-chief of Pambazuka News. And I encourage you very much, for those of you who've never consulted the site, it's well worth it. Just go to Google Pambazuka News, and it's an extremely lively website with lots of debate, discussion, articles, perspectives, broad range of issues that are addressed, from exactly what Feroz was talking about tonight to gay and lesbian issues, transgendered issues, culture, books, book reviews. I mean, it just goes on and on. So certainly it's well worth checking it out. And Feroz will be back next week, along with Molly Kane, who's also with Pambazuka News, Carrie Levitt, who's a renowned development economist, and myself, as we dove into a really fascinating debate about the role of NGOs. Quite frankly, the counter-revolutionary role of NGOs. It's a good discussion, so I encourage you to join us next week to listen to that. And right now, we're going to go back to our tribute of Gil Scott-Heron, who sadly passed away this week, and this is Shut Him Down.